Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Leadership from the Heart. Today, we have Sinjit Craner, the founder of Agrarian, where he helps rural sales and marketing teams grow with confidence using psychology-based strategies that deliver real results. With hands-on experience in challenging markets and practical people-first approach, Sinjit empowers agrarians to connect more effectively with their buyers and to close more deals by speaking the right language, which is so important. He's also the host of Rural Sales Show and the author of 365 Rules to Master Rural Sales. Sinjit, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Romy. I'm good. It's Monday morning here. Your Sunday afternoon in Las Vegas, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Good.
So, Sinjit, you said that the problem with sales is selling. Can you help unpack that, break it down for us? What are we getting wrong and what should we be doing instead?
Yeah, cool. Well, the thing is, the more you sell, the less you will sell, right? No one likes to be sold to. And we can get straight into the psych is that humans don't like being told what to do. And it's called reactance theory, right? So no one likes to be told, coerced, pitched, and all that kind of BS. So what we do is we stop selling. Because the more you try to sell, the less you will sell. You're going to get pushback, resistance, reluctance from your buyers. And instead, you need to make your buyers feel safe. Because, Remy, when you walk into a store and they ask you the proverbial question, can I help you? What do you say?
No.
What do you say? No. You shut down. And so it's a big bend. It's a big handoff. And they're just like, no, I don't. And there's a lot going on there psychologically in the buyer's brain when they do that. That's an automatic click and whir response, because every salesperson elicits, or particularly the bad ones that we both experience, elicit the law of threat and fear in the amygdala in the back of the brain. So without sort of going too psych and too deep for listeners straight off the bat, we need to warm them up a little bit more. That's why you won't win many more sales, because when you're so interested in serving your own interests rather than the buyers, you won't make any more sales. Very few people understand this. Because everyone's so self-orientated, because their survival is based on selling something, right? But the problem is selling something serves your needs, not the buyer's. So instead of being a seller, you need to actually think about being a buyer's assistant. And a buyer's assistant, the whole job of a buyer's assistant, this is a really important concept for your listeners, which I teach all my students, particularly farmers who are very oversold to, is they don't want to be sold to. They want to make good, accurate, and informed decisions. And so if they have someone that helps them make good, accurate, informed decisions that work in their best interest rather than the salesperson working in their own, they make more sales.
Yeah, and that kind of goes hand in hand with not selling someone something they don't need, right?
Yeah, but sometimes though people don't know what they need. Mm. So what you have to do then is you have to ask a lot of questions to help clarify and qualify what is the specific problem that they're trying to solve. So that's just an example of one question, or why are you potentially even looking at this now? And so what would the ideal outcome look like? So there's three questions I've just given you and your listeners straight off the bat there, which is try and understand what is the problem that they're trying to solve? Why are they potentially looking at this now? What's the ideal outcome? What would a good result look like? Why are you looking at this now? And we could go on and on and on and on and on. But what it is we're asking questions to try and clarify and qualify the priority and the urgency or the specific problem. Now, specificity is a bit of a word to pronounce, but being specific spits cash, it sells. Being general or generalized repels. Now, those aren't supposed to rhyme like Dr. Seuss, but there is a reason I do it, is that your listeners remember what I'm saying here Because the thing is, when you meet someone specifically, they are unique. It's highly personal and relevant to them. And you can't just gloss over it like another doctor transfer, transacting and processing another patient. You know, this is why doctors get sued all the time, particularly those with bad bedside managers, because bedside manners, sorry, it's very early here, because they don't make their patients feel nice.
Mm.
Patients don't feel nice, and then they don't go well on an operation or surgery or theatre. You guys or anyone will sue them because of the way you made them feel. So it's how you make them feel. So remember, salespeople don't make people feel safe. Bar's assistants make people feel safe. And then when they feel safe, they tell you more. And when they tell you more, you learn more. And when you learn more, you earn more. Yes, it's all supposed to rhyme.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Because as you talked about the doctor, if a doctor had good bedside manners and they made a mistake, you'd be much more forgiving of that. Right.
100%. But it's that opening thing, that first impression with the seller between the seller and the buyer. It's like, you know, the worst thing your people can do if they're trying to, like, you know, get their head around sales, go, hi, Romy, I'm not here to sell you anything. That is complete bullshit, because you are trying to sell something.
Yes.
Much rather than saying, Romy, I would love to sell you something, but I'm not going to sell you something that's not going to meet your needs. Let's work out what it is you want and why you want it, and then we can work out if it makes sense to have another conversation. Is that okay? Great. Do you mind if I ask a few questions first of all? Yes, and then away you go.
Yeah, way more open. I felt much better in that question than I did knowing, you know, you're on this webinar, but I'm not going to pitch you at the end. Like, keep it honest, keep it real. And if it's relevant for me, then of course I'll buy, right?
Yeah, that's 100%. I mean, you know, the worst thing you can do is lie. And funny enough, if you want to get all psyched, you know, you can lie to other people or worse, lie to yourself, but your brain knows you're lying.
And so what does the brain do when it knows you're lying?
Ah, now this is a very good question. So what happens is when you lie to yourself, I think that you cause psychological harm to yourself. So this is what we call a psychological contract. So imagine you're a spirit level, and I don't mean woo-woo spirit level, crystals, Burning Man, or whatever you guys are into, peace. Is what I'm saying is, it's like a spirit level is the level, you know, a spirit level tries to find. Do you call it a spirit level in the States, you know, in buildings when you're trying to find, you know, shelvings or framing pictures, and, you know, you have a spirit level to make sure it's square and it's level?
A leveler is what we call
it. A leveler. There you go. Yeah. So we call it spirit level, and you call it level. And when you say spirit level, you're thinking, what the hell am I talking about? So a leveler has a level in it to find the level. So we all have levels inbuilt within ourselves, like a leveler. But the thing is, that level will either go up or down depending on the things you do or don't do. And the thing is, this is the thing. When you come to sales, you have to have bulletproof belief. You have to have high confidence and conviction, because you get a lot of no's and a lot of knockbacks. What you do is, when you lie to yourself and you don't do the things you said you were going to do, you do harm to yourself. And we call it breaking your psychological contract with yourself. Now, what is a psychological contract? A psychological contract is the standards that you set yourself. And when you don't meet those standards, you go towards what we call the shamed self, which is lower, which is a downward spiral of things that you shouldn't do. Maybe you drink, or you take drugs, or you don't read to your kids, or you don't read books, or you don't exercise, or you don't eat clean, whatever the thing that you're supposed to do, you're not doing, then you don't feel very good about yourself. And when you don't feel very good about yourself, you'll project that into other people. Now, we're going pretty deep here, but, like, you will, you know, there's no reflection. There's only projection of your own, because you didn't work on the things that you need to do, because the hardest work is the inner work, right? So you've got to hold yourself to a higher standard, I think, in life and in sales. If you want to be successful in sales, you've got to be successful as a person. It's an inner game. Sales success is in the game. So don't break your psychological contract with yourself. Move towards your future self by doing the things that you have to do. Better still, do the things even when you don't want to do them. So it's Monday morning here in New Zealand. It's wet. It's springy. I will have to go to the gym today. I started very early with this podcast. I've got lots to do. I will go to the gym, rain or shine. I will go. I've had a really, really busy last week. Lots of travel, 15-hour days. I'll go to the gym because I need to go to the gym. If I don't go to the gym, I don't really feel very good about myself. If I don't feel really good about myself, I'm not going to be very successful in sales, because I'm not going to show up with that energy that I need to be in the calls and the conversations I have. So that's what we call the psychological contract when we lie to ourselves. That was very deep. Hopefully listeners understand it.
No, yeah, I love that. I want to go deeper in stuff like that because I do think that a lot of life happens in that depth, you know? So what would you attest to a salesperson who is successful but a slime ball? How do you say, or what would you attest to that success?
Right. Okay. I would say it's only short term, that success for starters. Mm-hmm. And I also think, because you can, in the States, you can play a numbers game because there's about 300 million of you, right? But I've got like guys in Canada, guys and girls that I teach in Canada, they're all rural reps. They will sell feed, fertilizer, machinery. But I obviously help them understand psychology and get inside farmers' heads and make them feel safe. And, you know, buyer safety is a very important concept that we'll talk about maybe. But I think, answer your question again, Romy, so I can answer it properly. Give it to me again.
It just was why are people who do live for a living successful?
Yes. Well, they're only successful short term, right? And what it is a buyer is instinctively tuned in. You think about caveman and cavewoman days, we know when someone's has our best interest or not. We're looking for the nonverbal. So you have, I think it's Maribian or Mahibarin. I can't pronounce it too early again. I've had enough green tea. 55% of your body language is nonverbal. And then 35% is paraverbal, i.e. your tone, your intonation, your delivery. And then about 7 or 10% is actually the words that you use. So basically, humans instinctively can sense when someone is actually serving them or not or selling to them. So with that person that's very successful and that is a slime ball, I'm really interested where that question came from, by the way. So we'll get more curious about it in a minute because I think that sounds like an experience you've had. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Is that right? Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, I would say that that's kind of like our culture here, especially like a used car salesman is what we call them.
Yeah, exactly. So what it is just think about if you want to not be slimy, and you want to be everything they're not, what you do is you have good intent. And our intent is where do you come from? So when we started this conversation, we talked about a buyer's assistant. When you come onto my car lot, God forbid, because I'm not one of those guys, I'm not going to sell you anything that isn't going to meet your needs. First of all, I'd say, Romy, welcome. Have you been here before? No. Brilliant. How best would you like to use the time we've got? What would make this most useful for you? And then you'll tell me I've got three kids or whatever your life is. I'm looking for something. I'm looking for an EV. I'm looking for a hybrid. Cool. What have you looked at? What have you tried? What do you like? And if you mention other brands, I'm going, great. You know, they're good. They're good machines. They're good cars, the Volvos, the Hyundais, whatever. And what brings you to this one? You know, how can we help you here? So I'm immediately, I don't want to talk about cars. There's actually very, very good ones, but majority very, very bad ones as well. I mean, Joe, get out of whatever it is, the guys that's got the Guinness Book of Records, and you've got, Andy Elliott with his veins that pop out of his head all the time. I think he's quite aggressive. I don't think he understands the concept of psychological safety. I think that's probably an oxymoron. I think some of his stuff's good, but I don't know if he understands all of that. It's always about your intent. Where do you come from? So basically what happens is most people in sales serve their own needs. Also their own self-interest. Now, self-interest is undefeatable. It's, you know, it can't be beaten. But the problem is you need to flip it. You need to work in the buyer's self-interest, not your own. So it's all about your intent. Where do you come from? So someone that's successful on a slime ball, you can play the numbers game, but usually your reputation usually bites you in the ass after a while. So you've got to think about how do you want to turn up? How do you want to be as a person? What is your role? I'd rather be a buyer's assistant and then over time of a period of successful transactions, then elevate to being their trusted advisor than be a nasty, slimy little sales rep all the time that's just burning numbers and people. Because you can get away with that, but it will bite you in the bum eventually.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you said buyer's advisor, because it is true that once you find a good salesperson, they become part of your life. You know, we had a really good car salesman at Volvo that you mentioned. And no matter who's in the family going to get a car, we're just calling Andrew, you know? So it is very true. Andrew's our guy. And anyone that needs a Volvo, Andrew's your guy.
Well, Volvo's great. I mean, the funny thing with Volvo, their positioning, they had a one word extra around safety. And safety actually implies quality. So very, very clever. I have two doctors that live opposite us. And being doctors, they're, you know, particularly focused on safety and they're in ED and the rest of it. And they got Volvos. So it makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah.
I keep getting this question. I want to go into the psychology of as a superpower, but I want to first start with, like, how did you get here? How did you learn Where did you start and where did you extract all this wisdom and become your own framework?
Sure. Just by getting curious. I mean, psychology is just curiosity. So basically, I just got curious about human nature. So I've worked for big ad agencies in London, Australia, New Zealand. I worked for big corporates. I went up against a graduate clearinghouse in London, worked with some of the big things like McCann Erickson, Young & Rubicon. And so since my uni days, I always had lectures that taught me in psychology and consumer behavior, and they were pretty early on. And they literally came from the agency world, and they were the top agencies in the UK. And I got very fascinated with human behavior, and I just got more and more curious about it. Funny enough, I got more curious about my own behavior first, actually, in terms of me. And then, of course, the more I understood myself, the more I understood others. And the first book I read probably 20 years ago now, because this isn't a fake thing. These are real, real, real bookies. I read Robert Cialdini's Influence book, and that was a seminal book for me. And then I started reading Dan Pink. And then I started reading Simon Sinek, and then I started reading...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed-sponsored jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Benjamin Hardy, I'm looking at them all here, Cal Newport, et cetera, and I just had an insatiable thirst and knowledge to get, and I just became a lifelong learner. So I don't have like a clinical psychotherapist degree. I actually have psychology that's proven the real commercial world.
Yeah.
Sure. So like, you know, actually commercially. So, you know, I mean, I'm very fortunate. We're in New Zealand, but we work with some of the biggest brands all over the world. We work with John Deere, we work with Case, Nufarm, Bayer. Delaval, they're like all of them, whether they're in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, United States. And we think that psychology is just really curiosity.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to get really good at your craft and commit to that. And I've been doing that now for probably 20 years.
That's beautiful. Yeah, no, I agree that psychology is just curiosity. That's a really well put way to think about it, because I too love psychology. But what would you say are some of the principles that you found the most powerful when it comes to like influencing buyers?
Yeah, great question. Big one. Danny Kahneman, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow. Beautiful book. Very, very hard book to read, but amazing book. He talked about prospect theory or loss aversion. So all the studies citate we are twice as motivated to loss than we are to gain. So if you want to talk about understanding people and what motivates and moves them, talk about what they stand to lose, not what they stand to gain. Now, before any listener goes, but yucky, sleazy salesperson, what I'm meaning by that is that you need to understand what they want, which is back to our early questions. So Romy, I'll be talking to you and say, tell me what the ideal car would look like for you. And you would say, whatever you say. And then we'd talk about the other things. And then we could talk about what would happen if you didn't get the thing that you wanted to get. So what are the outcome or the thing that you wanted? And so you think about if you've been unlucky in life and you've lost things, you've lost pets, partners, businesses, those will physically pain you. You know, those will psychologically mark you and pain you as much as physical loss. So loss is a much bigger driver of human behavior than gain, because we will always avoid pain before seeking pleasure. We will obviously want to have instant gratification, but we obviously, if I said to you, hey, Romy, here is $1,000, or would you like to die right now? That's an example. You would not want to die right now, or even though $1,000 would be pretty useful. So extreme example, but loss aversion is probably the most powerful concept I've come across. But it's got to be used in a very, very careful way. And it's got to be used, again, from coming from the right intent, from the right place, which is I need to work out what you want, and then if I can help you get it. And if I can help you get it, then we've got to work out the consequence if you don't get it, or you want to stay stuck, or you don't want to solve that problem, and then what happens for you then. Now, right. That is not manipulation. That is motivation, because you told me what you want. And my job as a buyer's assistant is to try and help you get that if I can, by qualifying and clarifying. If I can't, I'm not going to sell you something because I can't help you get what you want. Because I'd much rather play the long game. In farming, this is what's different about agriculture and farming. And maybe some of your listeners may understand this or may not. A farmer, when you sell them something, that thing that they buy, they have to see every single day when they come out of their door, man or woman. Like, they see that same piece of machinery or that paddock or that field that doesn't yield properly or doesn't strike in terms of harvest or planting. They are reminded of that decision every single day. And oh, by the way, they don't also just pack up their bags and their laptop and leave. Their life is their work. Their work is their life, and they're surrounded by it. So this is why it's so hard to sell to farmers, because they are incredibly resistant to change. Because also, when you sell to a farmer, it's not like it's a CTO or CMO that changes every couple of years or 18 months or 17 months. They're there for life. They're there for generations. And if you mess it up with a farmer in one generation, you won't sell to them for another two or three generations. Just ask the banks that foreclose on them, or insurance companies that don't do the claims and stuff, or machinery guys that don't provide the service. So I know I'm going off track a little bit there. Understanding all these laws of buyer safety, helping people make the best decisions, being the buyer's assistant, and also then helping them understand what they don't achieve. Because when you talk to people, going really deep here, like identity shifts or identity framing, is once you tell me what you want, you have literally subconsciously planted or anchored yourself in that thing. And then your subconscious mind, as you well know, doesn't know between real and imagined. And once you tell me what you want, we work out what happens if you don't get what you want. So a lot of people say to me, hey, St. John, I want to make another $50,000. Great, we can help you make another $50,000 this year. Are you willing to do the work? And here's the countless case studies. We've got rep after rep, whether it's feed or fertilizer or seed or machinery, who have got these results. I mean, we literally got hundreds of them. But you've got to do the work. Are you willing to do the work? And tell me, why it is that you want to have another $50,000? Oh, I want to take my wife and kids on holiday, or I want to replace our car, or we want to buy a renovation, or we want to buy an investment. Why do we want to do that? So we go down the five whys sort of mode as well. So loss aversion is the big one, and it's very much about motivation, not manipulation. Because if you can help people get what they want, why wouldn't you sell it to them?
Right. And the difference between motivation and manipulation is simply your intent, which you touched on before, which I love.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. I want to go down the path of like farmers. And we all know that farmers, like you said, are resistant to change. What makes them so resistant to change besides the generational stuff?
The consequence. The consequence looks them in the face every single day. So like we said, when they buy that header or that tractor or that tedder rake or whatever they're buying, that piece of machinery, and it doesn't work, not only do they lose financially, they lose reputationally. Now, farmers care greatly what other farmers think of them, because they might be a closed community, but they're not closed off. So everyone knows everyone in the zoo. So they're in Wisconsin or Nebraska or Dakota or wherever they are, they're milking cows or they're doing corn or whatever they're growing. They have to live with that, and they have to live with the financial consequence or the reputational consequence. So there's a financial risk and there's a face risk. So that means that they're going to think very, very carefully, and they're incredibly reactant and very, very cautious buyers. Very, very cautious, because by the way, they don't buy small things. You know, if you think about the head on deer harvester, it's like 1.2 million. Unless, or sold spread, that is a lot of money. It can be 1.5 million. They're not like little things like a tech stack for $30 a month. They're really big pieces of capital equipment. And their decisions will impact their lives. Again, they can't just like take it out the ground or just go, oh, I'm just going to delete my subscription here. Once it's in the ground and they pay for all the seed and all the fertilizer and the water or the irrigation or whatever their farming system is, they have to live with that decision. And so it makes them very cautious, and they will often stick to what they know because they fear change because of unfamiliarity, and they can't control it. Because remember, a farmer cannot control so many things. Now, you don't need to worry, Romy, about your podcast if it's raining outside or it's windy or there's ice melt or whatever else, or there's tariffs or there's insect breakout or there's disease or there's parasites or your herd's been hit with tuberculosis. You don't have those problems. They've got biological challenges, climatic challenges, commercial tariff challenges. There's so many things they can't control, which makes them absolute control freaks. So they have to make very, very good decisions. So again, long answer to a good question. Farmers are different because the consequences are so much deeper, reputationally and financially.
Do you see any innovation in the younger generations as they start to take over?
Yeah. They're adopting technology because they have no choice because they're so indebted. So what they're doing is they're using a lot of technology to reduce labor, to improve efficiency or effectiveness. You know, we've got like AI cameras now that detect dairy cow lameness better than a veterinarian can. So you've got the old, what we call in farming, iometer, doesn't work. We've got drones going over paddocks in terms of spectral cameras, and they can literally work out the yield quantity and the money they're going to make per farm. And so everyone's got this kind of feeling that farmers are really, really cashed up. I mean, farmers have good years and they can have really, really bad years. I come from a farming family as well, but they very much, the younger guys and girls are having to use technology because they don't have the same land price. They would have paid probably high money, even mum and dad's farm and succession plan, they would have bought it and it would have cost them a lot of money. So using a lot of technology to help them as a decision support tool. And the younger generation coming through, they have no choice but to adopt that technology. But the problem is a lot of agri-tech technology, some of it, not all of it, isn't actually delivering the desired result. So there's a lot more to that.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say tech is still tech, right? Tech is still tech. Ever evolving. Yeah. You talk a lot about learning the buyer's second language. Have we touched on that just yet?
When you say the buyer's sector language, did you say?
Second language.
Our second language. Yeah. Yes. Sorry, what do you mean by that?
Just kind of, so I think you touched on it a little bit, and so I wanted to kind of go down that path about the buyer's going to tell you what they need. And so if salespeople can sort of turn off their objective and turn into what the buyer's actually saying they need, they can actually use that. And so I wanted to kind of go down that path and like unpack that a little bit.
So second language kind of really means like, what do they actually really, really want? Because some people don't know actually what they want. So it's like a doctor, you need to diagnose properly, not prematurely. Find out why it is that they want the thing they want. Have they truly thought it through? Again, this really comes back to being a buyer's assistant. Again, like, if you have a problem and hang up with sales, just be a buyer's assistant, because it changes your whole psychology and the dynamic and how you talk. But a buyer's language or secondary language is more around the underlying drivers behind what they're saying. So this is where we get into it. It's like, so when you have an objection or you have a question, behind that question, there's an underlying driver. And that's where the curiosity or the psychology kicks in, because you're trying to work out, why is it that Romy's asking that particular question? So I can usually work out what your avatar is, or your archetype, or your persona, whatever you want to call it. And I'm trying to work out. And usually most of the time, the questions, the objections, they are fear-based, and they need someone to help navigate them through, to help them understand and give them proof and truth that these situations or these choices or options will work. So what you're trying to do is you never take what someone says at face value. You look at what's happening behind the question or behind the objection. And it's what we teach with our students is, when someone objects, don't be offended by it or take it as a personal rejection. Lean into it, embrace it, and try and understand, why is Romy asking that question? Now, that's the first thing you do to elicit a better response, is you stop yourself and you catch yourself. And I go, why is Romy asking me that question? Now, I don't say it out loud, because I would sound like I'm mad and you'd lock me up, right? But I say it to myself and go, why is Romy asking me that question? And then I've got a better response. And I'm saying, Romy, are you asking that question because you're concerned that you might be the first person that's using this piece of technology? Is that what's concerning you? And then you go, yeah, damn right it is, because I don't want to be the guinea pig and you and Beta and it all buggy and it doesn't work. Awesome. So what if I told you that we have 10 other farmers that we've already run as a case study group, and we actually have another 100 farmers who have done this, and you could go and talk to those farmers? Would you like to do that? See what I've done? I've worked out why you're saying what you're saying, because what we're saying is, when someone says what they're saying, we need to work out why they're saying it. So it's the why behind the what. So I think that's where we're getting to, is like understanding and being curious and truly tuned into the person you're talking to say, why are they saying what they're saying? And that's going to lead to a better conversation, because then you're going to actually be able to talk at root cause, not surface, superficial, shallow level. That would be my answer.
That's a great answer. That's such a great answer. As you were responding to the objection, my fake objection, I automatically started to feel, again, safer, because you took my concern and you gave me examples of how the story that I'm saying may not actually be true. And there are references. And I think that that's where people get lost, is once we do get rejected or objected, we kind of just go into our head, and now we come back to ourselves instead of leaning into the other person.
Now, can I just drop the heavies on your listeners here? It's really interesting.
Let's do it.
Do you know why people really, really suffer when it comes to rejection in sales? Why do you think it is?
I feel that, I know for myself, that rejection feels like, I would say, childhood wounds, or sort of like, I want to say abandonment, but it's not abandonment. It's just not being chosen.
Yeah.
It's very personal, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Really, really good. It's because they've rejected themselves somewhere along the way. So they're hypersensitive to rejection, right? Because they have low self-worth, whether it's socialization, wounded child, all those things that we can get in psychology, and the scripts and the persona that they ran as coping mechanisms till they're 8 or 12. But basically, the reason why people are so sensitive to rejection is because they've actually rejected themselves. And that triggers, so that judgment is actually a trigger of the thing that they actually feel threatened about themselves. So that's the psychology in it. I don't mind being rejected because I've got high levels of self-worth because I've done the work. So if someone says no to me, it's okay because, well, one, we make sure we've got a bloody good marketing machine behind us and we've got lots of leads, because I don't want to be in a position of weakness where, Romy, you're my only deal of the month. Like, I'm never going to let that happen to me. And you remember also, buyers pick up on that confidence too. It's not a flex. It's just like, no, well, we would love to work with you, Romy, but we don't need to work with you. I need to let you know. Really important to let you know that, because we've only got the capacity to work with so many 5 to 7 teams each month. So we would absolutely love to work with you. But if you're not in a position, that's okay. And it's not going to be big, big pressure, sort of horrible stuff from us.
So let's build on those two things. Let's first deal with rejection. How does one, what would you coach if somebody was dealing with rejection in a less than valuable way?
Yes, I would say in terms of a sales context, the first thing I do, your immunity to rejection is to have so many prospects in your pipeline that you have as many options as your buyer. And so the first law of negotiation is the ability to walk away. So if you don't have enough options as your buyer, then you're in a position of weakness. The second thing is, you need to, in terms of the way to have immunity to rejection in sales, is if you've done everything you possibly could in that conversation, in that deal, and you left no stone unturned, you did everything, you did your prep, you're on time, you qualified them, you clarified them, you worked out the buying committee, you established value, you built the business case, all these things that we teach, and you still didn't get the deal, that's not on you, because you know when you've done your best. It's like when you go for a run, or you go for an event, or your high rocks, your CrossFit, whatever you're into. If you didn't leave everything out there and then you get beaten, you know you didn't do enough. You didn't leave it all out there. So as long as you've done everything you possibly could, I always say leave no stone unturned. If you've ticked all the boxes, done the process, because remember, the process protects. Surgeons have them, pilots have them, so do salespeople. We have a process that protects us. If you follow the process, you've done everything you could, and they still say no, then your self-worth isn't inflicted. It's not hurt, because you hold yourself to high standard. You've implemented and done everything you could. Then the no doesn't hurt you. It's like water off a duck's back. You're like, well, I did everything I could. And we've had several situations like that. I still actively sell for a living. And sometimes we get deals, sometimes we don't. We obviously get more deals than we used to because I know what I'm doing. But if we don't get the deal, as long as I've done everything I can, then I don't feel shame because I didn't create it, because I didn't create it in myself. So that's why I'm not sensitive to it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that. I think going all the way is, like you said, leave no gas in the tank, for sure.
No gas in the tank. Do it all.
And so let's build on the other concept, which was having confidence while selling. And I think that I want to go to a place where I'm just getting started. And so I have no confidence because I have no proof, at least in this section. And so how do I approach my first call or first couple of calls, first 10 calls with confidence, even if I have no evidence of success yet?
Okay. So if you, let's be clear, because it can be different lots of, there can be thousands of different scenarios. Do you work for a company that does have some clients and you're a new rep? Is that the scenario?
Yeah, let's use that one.
Okay.
And then so, I want to go to the entrepreneur, but let's start with that one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So if we go to the entrepreneur, let's go to the first one, which is you're working for a company as a new rep. You're repping for them, whatever you're doing, whether it's on the phone or on the road. You will have some client case studies. So I would say to you, Romy, it's Sinjin here from Rural Sales Success. You won't know us. We've worked with X, Y, and Z, and we've helped them achieve this specific result. Now, not now, because I've called you completely out of the blue, but there's a point, some point, would you be at all even moderately interested in talking about perhaps seeing and qualifying if we can get the same results we did for them with you? Not now, but when you're ready. So you see how I do it? Now, that's a jump way of doing a cold call, but it's like, I'm just getting straight to the point. We've worked with lots and lots of companies like yours. We've got these results. If you're even moderately interested in maybe finding about that when the time suits, because obviously I've called you completely out of the blue today, please do let me know. If I want to really trigger someone, I just put their competitor's name in the subject line. Why not?
Yeah.
You're going to get an
open.
You have
nothing to lose. Yeah, well, absolutely.
If I'm talking a case, I just put John Deere in the title. So, and then when it comes to being an entrepreneur, well, that's a big one because it's like, what are you selling? Who is your ideal client? All this kind of stuff. But the reality is, if I was starting out, the first thing I would do is what I said at the start of this call is I wouldn't sell. The first thing I'd do is I'd ask them for their advice. So I would interview them for insights. I would interview them. I'd not sell to them. And I'd say, hey, Romy, I've got this thing. I don't even know if it's market viable at the moment, but I would love to get your help and advice on it so we can make it the best. And by doing that, perhaps you can help me make it. And obviously, I've got to find the right person. But if you are solving a problem that's worth solving and they can see the value in that, you'll probably end up selling it to them. I'll give you an example. So when we run a lot of farming panels, so I do a lot of qualitative research. I've run around over 100 farming panels. And we're always there. We're never there to sell to the farmer. We're trying to understand the buyer journey, customer experience, moments of truth, all these kind of things that a good researcher would. And they're going, what is it that you guys sell? And then literally the person that sponsored the panel ends up selling the thing that we were interviewing them about. So the vein you got to tap when it's an entrepreneur is use the curiosity again. Ask them for their advice. Ask people if they can help you and don't sell to them. And you know what? When you ask someone for their advice, it's extremely flattering. It gives them a huge dopamine hit. As long as it's genuine and it's authentic, you know, it's not false flattery, but you ask them genuinely for their advice and you can give me some insight to make that product better, then usually you'll become a customer.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned a couple of sales coaches already that I have followed in the past. And so
you mean Jeremy Miner as well?
Jeremy Miner as well. Yeah.
What do you think of Jeremy? What do you think of him?
You know, I feel like he has a really good, I bought his book. I feel like he has a really good way of approaching it. It is coming from confidence and sort of being the person that has the ball, like the ball's in their court versus the opposite. So I appreciate that. I would say that it wasn't completely helpful for me because of the outline of the information. And so I wasn't able to, I think, maximize my potential within his course or within his book because it was just all over the place for me. And so I also listened to Elliot. Elliot also is the one that just, he's going to get me to do the thing, but it feels very intentionless, right? I didn't feel I was being intentional. And so my question was going to be around that. Listen to a lot of sales coaches, and I seem to be aligned more with intentionality. And so instead of quantity, right? So I would say that a lot of salespeople are like, just bang it out, send 1,000 DMs a day. And, you know, it's a numbers game where, you know, recently I found myself very drawn to maybe sending a video clip to 100 people that may take me 3 months, but at least there was intention there. What are your thoughts and what do you recommend? I see you shaking your head already, but where would you go with this?
No, I'm shaking my head in a
good way, yeah.
I'm nodding my head up and down if listeners can't see me. I really like your concept. That was really, really good. I love that, Remy. You taught me something around intentionality versus quantity. Now, again, at the start of the call, unprompted, I said to you, it comes where you come from. You said, you know, why is it that some sleazy salespeople have success? I said, well, that's only short-term, but you've also got to think about intent. So go back to buyer's assistant. If you want to transform your conversations and your dynamics and your interaction to customers, forget your own needs and serve theirs. So I talk about this concept of serve to sell. So what it is it's back to bar assistance, back to bar safety, psychological safety is my job. My only job is to not sell you anything, is to help you make good, accurate, and informed decisions. Now, everyone wants to be served and no one wants to be sold to. Now, what Jeremy does really, really well and his team at Seventh Level, I follow him. I will buy all my competitors' stuff because I like to know what's happening, or Jeb Blunt at Sales Gravy and all the rest of it, and all the books that I've written. I mean, I've had Todd Capone on, I've had Andy Paul, I've had some of the biggest sales trainers on my own little podcast, is I take the best of everything and synthesize it. And they've all got different points. But the reality is where are you coming from and what role are you playing? Now, I think Jeremy does a really good job on the intonation and the tone and the paraverbal. He's very, very good at that. And although it's scripted, it doesn't sound scripted because he's using linguistic markers. That's what we call it. And Andy, he's go hard and he's get stuff done and blah, 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 blah. But the thing is, you talked about intentionality and then you talked about confidence. Your confidence comes from your competence.
Yes.
All right. Your confidence comes from your competence. And where does your competence come from is actually understanding how humans behave and how they make decisions. So, for instance, I'll give Chase Hughes a plug here. Do you know who Chase Hughes is? So he's the FBI behavioral profiler. He's been on Diary of a CEO. I literally I'm doing some training with him at the moment. I'm going to shout him out. He's incredibly good. Understanding and teaching and complementing some of the things I already know is understanding where that person's at, meet that person where they are, and then where they need to go. Now, I'm not saying we're any better than anyone else, but I tell you what, I'm more interested in the person in front of me than the product or service that I sell. That is really important concept to understand. Be more interested in the person in front of you than the product or service you sell, because then you get highly curious about them. And that genuine, sincere intent, you talked about intentionality, to serve comes through the quality of your questions. So for me, it's a human-centered way of selling that is very soft, very nuanced, not hard, very psychological, not in a mind-bendy way, just keeping that buyer safe and helping them make good, accurate, informed decisions. Confidence comes from competence. And if you understand the right things, you'll make more sales because you're highly competent in human psychology, laws of human nature, human decision making. Be more interested in the person in front of you than the product you and service you sell. You will make more sales, I guarantee it.
That's great. Yeah. No, I feel like I'm a student right now, so I'm just taking it all in.
Mm.
Do you have any final thoughts for the listeners before we get into your podcast a little bit?
No, I mean, I would just be a student of psychology and I would commit to becoming a lifelong learner. If you are entrepreneurial and, you know, you might be really good at product operations or HR or finance or marketing or lead generation or automation, funnels, nurturing, whatever, I think the first thing you've got to do is actually understand humans, because basically you've got to understand your buyer and get inside your buyer's brain. Now, really understand what they're about, how they make their decisions, what their fears, what are their threats, what are their ego, their dream, their goals, and meet them where they're at. But I would say the biggest thing is the more curious I've become, the curiosity is a superpower because psychology is a superpower. Be very curious about the world and never, ever stop learning. And Warren Buffett, your man, I read his books ages ago and he said, the more you learn, the more you earn. Now, I literally took that one as a mantra, as a mission. And I can tell you, the more I've learned, the more I've earned. And the more curious I've got, my income has correlated to that curiosity. And my income has dramatically increased due to me being curious and developing a love of learning. So I would say never stop learning. Like Zig Ziglar, make your truck your university. Always be learning. Listen to great podcasts like this. Read the books. Write the books. Create more than you consume.
Yeah.
But if anything, I would just say become a lifelong learner, because the more you learn, the more you'll earn, which I will obviously attribute to Mr. Buffett, our octonarian from Omaha.
Very much appreciated. Yes, from Mama. If my listeners were to tune into your show and they could pick one or two episodes that would really paradigm shift them for them, what shows would they choose?
That's good. Well, we're coming up to close to 100th show. There's a few that stand out. I'll tell you the ones that stood out for me. One of the ones that stood out for me was Aaron Walsh, and he's a rugby and baseball sports psychologist. And he talks about in terms of learning, he talks about this concept of feed the hungry. And so his job isn't to develop appetite, it's to feed appetite. So if you're coaching or you're a manager or you're a boss, I would listen to that. I also, our first episode, which was pretty shaky because it was my first podcast back in the day, so I was pretty crap on my production values and I was in my lounge with a like really shitty mic. Suzanne Macefield, which is body language. We also have another podcast by one of your fellow countrymen, David Premier, and it's basically Sell the Way You Buy. And he's incredibly good around cerebral selling. So he's very good. You know, we've got Andy Paul, we've had Richard Harris, we've had Todd Capone, like some of your best, you know, some of these guys have sold millions of Amazon books. So some of these guys behind me have been on the show. So, I mean, you've got to kind of graze on. I've done a podcast on podcasts, all the podcasts I listen to. Like my favorite podcast I listen to is The Knowledge Project by Shane Parrish. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing podcast. And I listen to Diary of CEO with Stephen Park. He does a great job.
He's
great.
He does, yeah.
And he's top, top, top.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would, it really kind of depends what you, it's like the question is such a good question, Romy, but it's like, this is another question people ask me, say, oh, what should I read? What book should I read? I go, well, what do you want to learn? So what specifically do you want to, learn about habit forming or decision making or psychology or selling or copywriting or marketing? So we cover them all. You're like, you know, we are a rural business, but because farmers are so damn hard to sell to, you can learn a lot. Whatever sector you're selling, because everyone goes, oh, well, that's irrelevant. Why the hell you got this guy that, you know, sells psychology to reps that sell to farmers? I tell you why. It doesn't matter what sector you sell in, the psychology stays the same.
100% agreed. Yeah, that's why I'm telling people to, like, you should just go listen to the show. I'm sure you're going to grab some nuggets. Just in this episode, I grabbed some things that I'm going to start to adopt in my own business. And I think it's going to be very helpful and also give you a new perspective. And I think for me, I'm taking away caring more about the person, regardless if I make the sale or not. I really truly want to enter the connection in a way that I am serving you. And I fully trust in that once we find the connection, if it's there, then something will work out in either way, then it's still a win-win for everybody. And so I really appreciate that.
One more thought that does this, that will hopefully be a bit of a nugget for the listeners. I want you to cultivate a discipline of detachment. What I mean by that is I want you to attach yourself to the process more than the outcome. And what you're going to do is you've got to attach to the process of qualifying and clarifying your buyer like it's a sales interview, not a sales meeting, to keep both of you safe.
Yes.
Right? The process protects both of you. Your job is not to sell, it's to serve. And people that serve help buyers make good decisions. And people who help buyers make good decisions are not sellers. They're buyer's assistants. I mean, I came up with this concept of buyer's assistant, and I'm going to claim it. And it's not your job title, and it's not your email signature. But if you just say, can I best serve the best interest and help them make the best decision for them, whether it ends up being us or someone else, you keep them safe, and they will tell you more. And when they tell you more, you learn more, and you learn more. So I just really think this discipline of detachment, stop focusing on the outcome of the sale. Focus on the serve and how you help them make the best decision for them. And then you'll keep them feel safe. They'll tell you a lot more. You'll learn a lot more. They'll tell you a lot more. They'll feel safe with you. No one feels safe with salespeople.
Yeah.
So you do the complete opposite.
Right. No, I appreciate that very much. I know that that's going to resonate with a lot of the listeners. Sinjin, where can people find you?
Sure. Online? We have a one page, which we shout out on great podcasts like this. It's called ruralsalessuccess.com. So Roman and her team will put that in the notes.
Yep.
And you can download two of our books. One, which is really, really weird, but this is Ryan Halliday's The Daily Stoic, but I wrote it for rural
salespeople. I love The Daily Stoic.
I wrote this for rural salespeople. However, the first section is about learning yourself. Section is learning to be a rep, and the third one is learning to be a manager. Now, if it's rural, but I think you'd enjoy that, and you can get it on Amazon and or a Civit, or you can get the ebook and everything else. And every day there's an interaction. So what's the day there? It's Sunday what? Give me the date where you are now.
It's Sunday, October 5th.
Okay, October 5th. Okay. October 5th is booking interruption time. Okay. So the biggest challenge is to stay focused, is to have discipline where there are so many competing things. Now, you two need to get your work done on the same, and an open door policy won't help you all the time because research shows that open planned offices are unproductive due to the noise and interruptions. Science shows that the switching costs from being interrupted can take 23 minutes to get back into the flow state. And when you hear them say, can I grab just 5 minutes? You know it never ends up being 5 minutes. And then your whole day disappears. So train your team to book in interruptions in the way you do with your own meetings. You'll get a lot more done that way. Better still, make them take the time to train them and they won't interrupt you as much. So yeah, you know, like every day there's an entry, and I spent about almost, I don't know, 16 months writing that book. All the quotes, all the emails I send out every week. So yeah, all the resources there. Download, help yourself. I hope it helps someone.
Definitely. And we will have, I want to put your Amazon link in the show notes and also your podcast link along with that one website that you just mentioned. So everything will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you. This was, I know we struggled to get here, but I'm glad we got here. And
we got here in the wind. I was a bit worried for a while. I was like, I pulled my ass out of bed really early Monday morning. I've had really, really busy week, and I was like, where? But we got there and the technology was playing. We got the gremlin sorted. I hope your listeners have learned something. Yeah, just develop a real sense of curiosity about the people you meet and play that role of buyer's assistant, and you'll go really well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. I hope you have an awesome Monday morning and rest of your day. Thank you, Sinjin.
Thank you, Romy. Enjoy your Sunday afternoon and evening.
Thank you so much. You too.